Welcome to a Single Serving Podcast. I'm your host, Shaney Silver. I started this podcast because whenever I saw content for single women, it was about dating, how to date better, how to survive dating, and I know that we deserve more than that. So I created this podcast to change the way being single is seen, discussed, and felt, and I'm so happy to have you here with me. I hope you'll also consider joining the Facebook group for this podcast. It's become a really supportive community full of people sharing stories and encouraging one another and actually meeting up in real life too. There are three main ways that you can support this podcast. The first is simply share it. Share it with someone who needs to hear it, share it with your family, share it with your friends, anybody who could use a change in perspective when it comes to being single. The second way is you can rate and review this podcast on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds and it's a huge deal that really helps podcasters get more visibility and continue to do their work. And then the third way is you can become a patron of mine on Patreon. Patreon is a platform that helps independent creators earn money for creating the work that people enjoy. So there are multiple tiers that you can join, but my favorite one is a $5 tier that comes with an extra bonus episode of this podcast every single month. So there will be a link to it below. Check it out. And in the meantime, thank you so much for joining me. There's always something really comforting about sitting down to start talking to you guys. It's like, for me, it's almost as if you're in the room. I wish you were many times. I wish that I could have conversations with everybody, but for now, it's kind of one-sided, and I hope you don't mind. This is a single-serving podcast, and I'm Shaney Silver, your host. If you're a new listener, welcome. I am so happy to have you here. I talk about a lot of things, mostly how being single doesn't suck. So if you were looking for that, you are in the right place. If not, I hope you'll listen anyway, because this is a great fucking conversation. My guest today is Laura Bogart, and I know who she is because of all of you. If you are in the Facebook group, you will no doubt have recently seen a piece of hers that she wrote that was shared multiple times in the Facebook group. The title of it is "Quitting Sex Was the Best Thing I Ever Did for Myself," and the subhead, which I will also read to you, is "My sex life as a fat woman was a trickle of accumulated humiliations and loneliness, so I decided to try enjoying my own company instead." And let me tell you something, it is a powerful read. I have obviously linked to it in the show notes. I hope that you'll read it. I also kind of suggest that you read it before you listen to the episode. It's a very, very powerful piece of writing that I was incredibly impressed by. I instantaneously reached out to Laura, and I am so grateful that she said yes to being on the podcast. We had a fantastic conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. I'm going to play it for you in just a second. Before I do that, I just wanted to say some cool news over on my Patreon. I have a brand new tier starting with the month of August on Patreon. It is a group Zoom. So if you would like to join that Patreon tier, it is $15 a month. And these group Zooms are going to be led by me, obviously. And we're really going to get into some shit. I really want to spend more time, first of all, talking to you all and seeing your faces. I've had a need to do that for a while. And I sort of love a group discussion setting. I tend to really thrive in those. And so I wanted to do that with you guys because obviously I am just so in love with this audience. But I also really want to get into the things that I talk about on this podcast and when I'm a guest on other people's podcasts, because I know there are questions. I know it's really easy from my perspective to say things like reframe your mindset around being single, but I want to get into the how of that. I want to use real examples and real, I guess like almost like homework, like actual things that you can take away to do in your real life and to practice in your real life that I have done that have helped me come to a place in my single life where this is pretty great, honestly. And it's pretty great while at the same time not closing me off to my next relationship, which will be fantastic because it will have to be, because the only thing that could make me stop being single at this point is going to have to be something that is just as fantastic, if not more fantastic, than my single life that I love. So I have moved completely from a place of absolute darkest pits of single misery to this podcast and all of the work that I do around single life. So if I can do this, I want everyone to know that it's possible for you to do it as well. And I hope that in these Zoom sessions, we really get into the how of it. Obviously, all of your questions and discussion topics will be welcome. I will send over to everyone on this Patreon tier, I will send over an agenda in advance of the Zoom so that you know what we're going to discuss. And further, you can prepare or send me any questions that you have that you want me to specifically address. Obviously, in the Zoom itself, you are more than welcome to live chat with each other, to ask me questions live, all of that. It is an hour that is going to be absolutely outstanding. I'm so excited for it. It's going to happen every month. So you can sign up for it on my Patreon. There is obviously a link below in the show notes. And I want to let everyone know that I'm going to hold these on one Saturday each month to accommodate as many people's work schedules as possible. But if you cannot attend, or if you're just on a time, like if you're in Australia and the time zone just like doesn't really work for you, I want you to know that I'm recording all of these and they're going to be available as videos for you as a patron. So if you are on the group Zoom tier on Patreon, even if you can't attend live, you will be able to see the recording. So I'm so excited about this new offering. I'm so excited to see your faces, and I really hope that you join me in there because as much as I love talking into a microphone right now, I'm staring into a computer screen and I need more interaction. It's a pandemic, guys. Like, join me. So I'm so excited for that, but I also want to say thank you to all the existing Patreon patrons who are so supportive of my work. It is absolutely just like heart exploding, the amount of love that comes from all of you. It is really, it keeps me going more than you know. And so I want to say thank you to all of you. I also want to tell everyone listening, you are all welcome to join the Facebook group, which is completely free and is a wonderfully supportive community that I am especially grateful for during COVID-19, but I was for, you know, a year prior to that. So I hope you'll get in there and hang out with all of us in there. And, if you want to support this podcast in ways beyond Patreon, you are welcome to do two things. First of all, you can subscribe to it. That is an option. Subscribing is cool. Do that. And then your phone will light up every Monday morning when you get a new episode of this podcast. And then after you subscribe, if you would like to leave a rating and a review, that is really, really supportive of this podcast. It's a great thing to do. It's easy. It takes 2 seconds. It's on Apple Podcasts. If you want to leave a rating and a review, that would just make my day, essentially. So anyway, I'm going to get into the chat with Laura. I had such a lovely time talking to her, and I hope that you enjoy this. I also want to say thank you to everyone who shared this piece with me, because I, as you know, I'm very, very open to your suggestions for guests. But sometimes you suggest guests to me without you really realizing it. I read the content that you share in the Facebook group, and I look to see where it has come from. And there are so many moments where I'm just like, this is someone I have to talk to for the podcast, because obviously their work is resonating with this community. So thank you to everyone who shares and emails me and sends me suggestions. I read everything. I take in everything. And I'm so open to the ideas and the thoughts that come from this audience. So thank you all so much for that. So I'm going to start the episode now. And I hope everyone is staying very safe and very healthy. Okay, there was just a really loud noise outside. It has gone away. Now I can really wrap up this introduction and tell you how grateful I am that you're listening to the podcast and sharing the podcast and hopefully enjoying the podcast. I don't know. You tell me. Email me. Send me an email and tell me if you like this podcast or not. Either way, I'm open. My email is asingleservingpodcast@gmail.com. Get in touch, say hi, and I always write back. I am very lucky this evening to be speaking with Laura Bogart, and the reason I'm speaking with her is because of all of you. Recently in the Facebook group, one of you, probably more than one of you, shared a piece that she's recently written for BuzzFeed, and the title of it is "Quitting Sex Was the Best Thing I Ever Did for Myself." And the reaction from this audience was so significant that there was no way I couldn't speak to you. It was immediately clear that I needed to have you on the podcast if you were so gracious as to join me. So thank you for joining me on this podcast. I'm so happy to have you. When I begin my episodes, I like people to let everybody know what you would want an audience of single people to know about you as we begin our chat.
Oh, that's a good question. You know, it's funny. I've spent most of my adult life as a single person. And I think the thing that I would want people to know about it is that it's okay if your relationship to it should change, because the idea of being single in some capacity is so much of an identity, and it becomes as much of an identity as being in a relationship in a way. And I've had periods where it's made me really sad. I've had periods where I felt happier and freer because of it. I've had periods where I'm down about it. I have periods where I'm sort of up about it. And then I have periods where I don't even really think about it or regard it at all. Like, it's something that you get to have complicated feelings about.
Where are you in the world, and what are you a writer full time, or is this something that you had just dabbled in? Tell people like what you do in the professional world.
So I am a writer. I actually published my first novel in 2020.
Amazing.
I would be remiss. Thank you. I would be remiss if I didn't mention it. It's called Don't You Know I Love You? And it's out for, I know, and it's out from DZANK Books, and that's DZANC. And so you can get it there. You can get it at bookshop.org, anywhere where you would like to order books online, or, you know, in bookstores, socially distanced independent bookstores.
I guess I'll start by asking you about the BuzzFeed piece. I'm curious as to how it came about. Like what led to it existing essentially?
Well, I saw a call for pitches on Twitter, and they were talking about, BuzzFeed was talking about Sex Week. And one of the things I've always liked about those pieces when I've read them is I feel like they have sort of covered a gamut of experiences. And this topic had sort of been on my mind for a minute, because I had been having just conversations with friends of mine who were older, had different life experiences. And we were talking about this sort of pressure to always be sexy, to always be sexual, and how constraining it felt. And people put a lot of stuff online, particularly about their sex lives. And we were sort of noticing it, I think, particularly among, you know, a lot of women, even younger women, but it's some women in middle age or a little bit older. And there was an element of sort of bravado in the posting about sex and sexuality. And that can be a very good thing, obviously. It's certainly better than a world in which we can't talk about these things, frankly and graphically. But I started to really think about my experiences and the other side of that, where I'm someone who has sort of made choices that are on the opposite end of the spectrum in the name of kind of self-preservation and self-regard. And I was just thinking that you don't often see those experiences or hear stories about them, at least rendered in a sort of compassionate way. It's always, there's something wrong with you, there's something broken, that it's coming from a place of woundedness. And yes, it can, but again, like your relationship or my relationship with that part of my life has evolved, where initially it did start out as a certain sense of woundedness, and then it became sort of an armor, and but also, you know, an armor, you know, protects you, but it also gives you a place to heal and maybe a place to grow. And so when that call went out, I thought, okay, I'm going to pitch them on this and see if they're interested. And they accepted the pitch, and I had a really lovely experience working with them and getting the edits up. But I really wanted to talk about just sort of different modes of being, because I think sometimes when we think about what empowerment means, we think about it in very clear kind of binaries, and that's not the way that life is for a lot of people. There's experiences that are in between, and I wanted to talk about that.
Do you find also that sort of societal focus on fuckability essentially, yes, is exhausting? I find it to be incredibly exhausting.
It is, honestly, and it became this sort of like weird barometer. And again, I would see it be like, you know, someone's a hot mom, or like someone's a hot, they're in their 30s, or someone is, you know, like they're fat and they're hot and they're fucking, or they're this. And it's like, yes, but this is just as constraining in so many ways as the pressure to be demure. And it's another way of sort of limiting women's experiences, or people's experiences. I'm speaking from my own perspective as like a cisgendered woman. But I really saw it as being like, this is just another way. And it was promoting a very specific type of sexuality and sensuality as well. One that was very, I found, about conventional attractiveness, one that was very much about, you know, buy this outfit, buy this toy, look a certain way, you know, this is the way to be. And it was like, I've never found that to be helpful for myself. I feel like it felt as shaming to me as some of the messages I got about, well, you have to lose weight to look good, or you have to lose weight to be healthy. And then it became, well, you're not a fully realized human being if you're not attractive. You're not a fully realized human being if you're not healthy in a certain way. Or you're not a fully realized human being then, you know, if you're not having all this great sex. And it's like, this is just not my experience, and it's not something that feels as readily available to me and in the culture. And you know, when I made the decision to take myself out of it and to not worry about being fuckable, then I really felt like a lot of things just freed up for me emotionally, where I was not preoccupied with what I looked like, who I was talking to, you know, did people think I was cool or not? Was I sad? I was just me.
Yep. I also find that sort of newer narratives around sex as it pertains to every body is lacking in nuance. It's two ends of a spectrum, essentially. There really isn't a lot of variety in those stories or in those images or depictions of everyone's sex lives. It's like, there isn't yet room for every story, which is why I appreciated what you had to say, because it was telling a story that I had not heard, that obviously many, many women in my podcast audience had not heard and were delighted to hear. I'm actually really curious, what was the response that you got to that article?
It was really overwhelmingly positive, because you put something like that out in the world. And like, I'd be honest, like when I've had conversations, even with people I know, if it's come up, and I never actually like admitted to the number of years, like if I talked to people I knew, I'd be like, well, it's been some time, or like, it's been a little bit. And I would have people, and they would mean very well, but they'd be like, oh, you know, but you just got to get back out there. And isn't that sad? That's so sad. You're depriving yourself, you know? And I have to say, like, the responses that I got were a lot of women, and women of all sizes and all age ranges, and levels of, I guess I would say, conventional bodiedness. I don't know how else to put it. Messaged me and said, I really relate to this. I understand where you're coming from. This is me. And I had a lot of people share the number of years that they had been sort of without as well. And I feel like we talk about this issue of celibacy. We talk about it a lot in terms of men. We're very culturally preoccupied with it in terms of men and in terms of the idea of the incel, or the man who is made, you know, who is celibate through various social circumstances. And lashes out and becomes deeply angry. And I think for women, we're really conditioned to believe that we're all inherently desirable, or we should be inherently desirable. And that, you know, even a lot of depictions of women's lives have focused in some way on romance or budding sexuality or mature sexuality. And very rarely do you have narratives that are about not necessarily a lack of sexuality, but a lack of like, this is the focal thing in one's life. And I think when the preponderance of material about women is a reaction to men and a reaction to being desired by men, there's a lot of women who get left out. You know, and I'm speaking again of conventional narratives. I understand that there's a variety of experiences, but I think there are a lot of people who've been deeply wounded by that. And so I had a lot of people message me and just say, you know, this was my story, or I had to stop worrying about this for my own mental health and my own physical well-being. So I got a lot of really emotional things.
It's really, I've received some of those in past, from past work that I've done as well. And it's kind of like, I wasn't ready to receive a lot of what I read at all. I was
overwhelmed with the honesty and the vulnerability that people were sharing with me. I had to teach myself how to receive it, because I wasn't really ready to hear it. But I can't even imagine what you have read, because I've never written about sex as vulnerably as you did. And I, in my own life, I think that I do aspire to it, but I haven't yet achieved that. It's not something that I'm comfortable with, because I have this like setting on my brain that's like, it's no one's business. And I don't know why I have that, because I think there's so much else in my life that's like everybody's business now.
I don't think that's inherently a bad thing. I mean, I think that it's funny, because I had not talked about this for a long time. And some of it was out of like shame at the cultural messaging that we get. Some of it was because I was tired of people trying to like, and mean like sometimes well-intentioned, sometimes not, be like, oh, honey. I called the oh honey me, like, oh honey. But there was also a part of me that for a very long time was like, it's nobody's business what I do or don't do. And it was funny, because it was the call for pitches, which came out pre-COVID. And then I think when I was like revising it, you know, people would be at home and they'd be like, I don't know how I'm going to live. I don't know how I'm going to do. And I don't mean to invalidate those experiences. I understand there's a lot of loneliness and frustration, and I certainly feel it too. People staying, locked down responsibly. But I have to admit, I would read some of those posts and be like, oh, really? Like, I feel kind of like, oh, honey, myself. Like, come on. 4 months.
Okay. Well, we should talk then.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, like, seriously though, like, I'm glad that it was out there for people to look at it this time and be like, you know what? Like, and I think also there's going to be a lot of hesitation, even as things potentially maybe reopen at some point, because we don't know, you know, when there's going to be a vaccine. Meeting people that you don't know is going to be tricky. And so I think if the piece can make somebody feel better about that decision, or like that it's not the end of the world, that you can still be a thoughtful person, a sensual person, a person who's engaged in the world and not cloistered away from it, and also not be having sex, like, then that's good. Like, I'm glad for that.
Yeah. Can you just set a little bit of groundwork before we get into the rest of the interview? Can you define celibacy for this audience?
So that's a good question. I mean, it has a variety of definitions, I'm sure. And I'm sure some people, because, you know, there's the magic wand in the photo, and it plays a part.
Right.
So I don't even know that, but according to some definitions, I myself would not be considered. So I will say for myself, when I think of the word, I think about it as sexual contact, and that's a broad spectrum. There's no kind of, you know, I'm certainly not thinking of one clear and easy definition, but I think of it as being sexual contact, congress, to use more of an antiquated term, with another person or persons.
Cool.
I will keep it very broad.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I also think that that term, coming to a decision for yourself, if it is a decision or a realization, mm-hmm. or just sort of like a personal boundary, mm-hmm. it can also be in flux. Like, it's, yes. if you come to a place in your life where you're like, okay, this is a celibate time for me, yes. that doesn't mean that you have to like give yourself rules that weren't there before. Like, I don't think yes. that we like have to obey any sort of self-imposed boundaries. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. I mean, and that's the thing that I talk about in the piece, is that this was not a like, I'm done, can I curse?
Please.
Like, it wasn't like, I'm fucking done with this shit. It was like, you know, I could make a choice to go on this app and, you know, maybe have some shitty experiences and feel bad about myself. Or I can make the decision that I'm going to stay home and write, or I'm going to go hang out with my friends, or I'm going to, you know, watch Netflix, or I'm going to hang out with my dog and feel better and, you know, my spend time with people that are not going to make me feel shitty. And so it just was sort of like accumulation. It was, because I feel like I'm also the type of person that if I went, that's it, no more, I would have been like, oh, really? Oh, you think so? Like, I would have maybe, you know, that would not have been the most productive thing for me. And, you know, this may change, like, after the pandemic is over. And I think I'm also a little bit older and a little bit savvier now, hopefully. And more, I think that the thing or the gift of being celibate, like on my terms, I just couch that as this is my terms, is that I know that this is fine. It's not the end of the world for me. And I have gone out, you know, in pre-pandemic times, like I have gone on some dates. Like I started to, you know, around the fall of 2019, think, well, maybe, you know, this might, but then, you know, nothing really happened, and I didn't feel pressure on myself to make something happen because I knew that I was going to be okay. I think that is what is empowering about it, is that because it just sort of ended up being a life choice that I made, like gradually, and I didn't even know that I was making it, like I feel more empowered to make better, like deliberate choices, if that makes sense.
It does. And that's such an important point that you make about relieving pressure from yourself. Mm-hmm. Like we don't have to have pressure on ourselves that is self-imposed. People ask me all the time if I have sworn off dating because I deleted all my dating apps a year and a half ago. No, I haven't sworn off anything. I think that sounds really harsh. Can I just ask, is your dog nearby?
Yes. I'm sorry. She's panting.
That's okay. Can I see her?
Yeah.
I'm like, I can hear this dog and I can't see it. And I need to see the dog.
I mean,
oh my God. Oh my God. What a sweetheart. You guys can't see, but this is the cutest black dog I've ever seen. Is it a lab?
She's a lab mix. I don't know what with.
Perfection.
But,
she is mixed with perfection. Oh
she
my God, she's so
is,
cute.
And she knows when I'm like on a call too, and she'll be like, no, she is, this is Mina.
Hi, Mina. Thank you for letting me see her. That really made my evening. I've had a very long day. I needed to see a dog.
I will send you pictures. No, she's, but like, she's a good companion. I mean, like, it's nice to have, I mean, I think the other thing too, and you know, she had a predecessor who was a German Shepherd who was like the love of my life. That dog. I mean, you're the love of my life too, Mina. But be careful. Tova was a German Shepherd, and she was absolute. Like I can't even. I will get emotional about her too much. But no, I mean, like, even like, you know, that's a form of companionship, and like
is well versed in pets. We share like photos of each other's pets like all the time as like a means of like group gathering and celebration. Aww. You should totally join the Facebook group, by the way. It is
fantastic.
I will
join the Facebook group.
We share pet photos constantly. It is just like, if it's too quiet one day in my Facebook group, I'll just throw a cat photo up there and it takes care of itself. You know what I mean?
And I'll give a picture of Mina. But like, honestly, like the dogs that my dogs have been better companions to me than a lot of the men that I've dated. And that's, like you could say that's sad, but it's also like, who cares?
I don't find that sad at all. Like,
yeah.
Your dog will text you back immediately.
She will, like, and you know, and she is, you know, like a good companion. Like, it's just
the way.
But
it
that's
is.
What I mean. I mean, I think that that's the thing too, where it's like people want to have an all or nothing at all, or think that like romantic relationships are sort of like the apex, like the alpha of attachment, human attachment. And I think we need to challenge that. I think that there are varieties of models of families and attachments, and some of them involve sex, some of them don't. And one is not superior to the other.
100%. So we actually have a very special treat in this episode. The entirety of this interview was written by this podcast's audience. So question that follows is directly from them. I haven't edited anything or changed any of their words because there were just so many of them that had such a positive reaction to your piece. I wanted to let them lead. So I'm just going to dive into these questions. The first one says, while the author of this awesome article describes not having sex in a decade, I'm curious to know if she's also sworn off actively dating other people or not, and how she feels about this. Does she think that our culture will ever reach a point in which women are truly valued for who we are internally and how we look by men? So many people act as if romantic love and dating are normative experiences for everyone, but race, class, physical size can cause people to be excluded.
And I think that latter point is your reader pointed out is exactly what I wanted to say, because it is so different. And again, so much of the stories in the media that I would talk about would really look at sort of having dating relationships. I think normative is the perfect way to put it, but it is different. It is very different for all sorts of people. And, you know, I don't know, I guess I'm working backwards on the question. I don't know if we will reach a point where that is ever completely goes away, but I do think it is changing and people are getting more open and more candid in talking about these things. And I think, you know, I consume a lot of culture. I like pop culture. I think it imprints on us in ways that we cannot fully even comprehend. But I do feel like what will really move the needle is when people tell their stories and when people show different life experiences of dating and having relationships, or not dating and having relationships, you know, and what they choose to focus on or not. And I think it's going to take just a lot of kind of cultural dialogue. I think it's going to be, you know, we went from a culture where you couldn't talk about these things at all, and dating and courtship looked a certain way, and it was for certain people. And I think that element of it hasn't really changed as much as people wouldn't think it has. But in terms of a sort of bit raunch culture, so to speak, I guess that's to borrow an Ariel Levy term, where it's just sort of bombastic and out there. I think offering, showing sort of a quiet alternative, it's going to take just a lot of people sharing, and that will kind of move the boulder up the hill a little bit, if that makes sense.
It completely does. And I think you've started it very elegantly with what you wrote. Our next question, I'm actually really curious about this too. And I like discussing strategies around this. The listener asks, I would be interested in how she deals with the inquiries of friends and family for her lack of dating, and how open she is about her celibacy to those in her life.
Well, it's interesting. Like, I think, you know, I think just at some level, being a fat woman or a woman of size, like, there is, and again, I'm speaking to my very specific experience in that context, you don't get asked about it as much. Like, and as I, you know, when I was in, and also being over 30, I'm 38 now. You don't get asked about it as much because I think people make assumptions about, well, of course not. And I think you, in the past, I would have let that bother me more. It bothered me more in my 20s, I think, because I was more sensitive to...
I think everything bothers everyone more in their 20s.
Everything bothers everybody more in their 20s. But when I was in my 20s, like, I was like, I have to you know, be thin and I'm a failure if I'm not. And so those questions would feel more like indictments. Most of the people that I'm very close to, like, have known that dating has not necessarily been a priority for me. So I haven't been asked about it a ton. I did not necessarily talk about the number of years. That, I think, was honestly, that I know I've alluded to this before, that was honestly the hardest part of the piece, where it's like, here is that number, you know, it's like double digits. Wow, we're really doing this. I think that was the hardest part. But, like, you know, like I said, I think on some level, like, I almost benefited from that a little bit, because I just didn't have people prying. And some of it was because I think people knew me, and some of it was because, you know, look, I'm a fat woman, I'm almost 40. People just assume, date her.
That's a whole other bag of cats, by the way. We need to start giving a shit about people after they turn 35.
That and there is just this assumption that you're just done at that point. And like, you know, like, I work in an office full of women who before, you know, this, last year, and everyone was talking about their partners or, you know, significant others and whatever, and nobody would ask me. And I guess they thought, well, maybe she's going to be private about it, but it was also like, so in some ways, I think it's the lack of intrusion is good, but in other ways, it does reinforce that kind of, well, you know, you're fat and you're not 22. Nobody wants you.
That's so fucking irritating.
It is. Yeah.
I mean, it's good that we don't have to constantly come up with excuses or reasoning that make other people happy. But at the same time, like, it would rather that we lived in a world where everyone was like, there were just more positive conversations and back and forths that didn't make people feel uncomfortable. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's
I think so too. Or where it wasn't just treated like information. I mean, I will say, like, the thing that I got was people like, so what's new? And like, I'd be like, well, I did this or I did that. Like, that's the thing that'll get you, right? What's new? And you can tell sometimes there was a little bit of like a drop or like a little darkening behind the eyes, where it's like, oh, like, and you can accept that comes from a place of love, that they want you to be happy, but it's also like, you know, this ain't it. This won't be what does it, at least right. for now.
Right. And other things can do it. Other things can provide happiness, but it's like, we're so laser focused on this one thing being the thing that makes people happy, that I can't even fathom the come down that must happen. Like, if you do get married and you're not happy shortly thereafter, how fucking awful must that be? Can you imagine?
No. And that's the thing, you literally said happiness, like, that's the happily ever after. That is considered, like, isn't it like in Little Women, people lose their shit when she turns down Lori? And then it's like, oh, but don't worry, like, the professor is coming. And like, people were talking about, like, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the new Little Women. And I guess spoilers for a book and a movie that have been out. but like, the way that like Greta Gerwig like ends the movie is, it's like, maybe like she leaves like some doubt in your mind, like maybe she gets with the professor, maybe she doesn't, but the happy ending is she like gets her book and like holds her book, like she writes the,
that is my fucking happy ending. I will tell you that right now. Ending.
I love that that's how that gets cheeked. So like, stories like that or things like that, and from people who are not willowy and white, like Saoirse Ronan, like, also are important. So that's my soapboxing. But yeah, I mean, I think we just need new understandings of what a happy ending is, so that people don't get sad for you when that's right? not your life.
Oh, there needs to be more narratives that provide that. This next question I love. This person asks, this is actually a prior podcast guest that asked this question.
Oh, nice.
She says, ask her to talk more about this. This is brilliant. And then she quotes you to say, I realize that the pressures to be perpetually hot and forever GGG and DTF were as vice tight and oppressive as the social mandate of thinness. Also, thank her for the phrase "Lady Content Industrial Complex." Thank you
for that. You're welcome. Yeah, but it is. It's like if you look at any of those magazines, and they used to be like more overt about it, but it was like, here's how you get thin, and here's how you fuck better, mm-hmm. and very rarely was. They treated getting an orgasm as like being like a contact sport in a way. Like you got to like put a notch. Okay, like you're a fully actualized woman. You're doing yoga. You're getting the skin lightening cream. Like you got your promotion and you have multiple orgasms. Like it like literally felt. It feels very oppressive. It feels sort of like here's another way you have to be perfect. And when it wasn't completely focused on here's how you please your partner, and especially when I read it, you know, it more in my 20s, it was, you know, did not acknowledge anything that was not a cis heterosexual relationship. So I don't know if it's changed since then, but it felt like there was no kind of conversation about like you could just be sensual with someone, you could just hang out with someone, you could just, here's how to be a good conversationalist, here's how to listen well, here's how to do these things. It was like, nope, like here's how you have an orgasm, and you can have multiples, not just one, or like you have to have like a mind-blowing one in order for it to matter, and you have to give him one, it has to be at the same time. And it was like they had this like kind of weird Olympic competition going on, and you know, and they would put it at the same time, they'd be like, here's your, you know, Gucci skirt suit for your promotion, and you know, here's how you lose 100 pounds without, you know, it's the designer tapeworm. I don't know. I mean, it's just like, so it just feels like another way to do it. And, you know, even when you see somebody out there, I mean, I talk about Lizzo and I don't, you know, I think that there are certain, I mean, one of the things I love about her and her persona is just that she's not just talking about how much she likes, you know, sex. She's also like very sensual and a very much about fun and having pleasure and like just enjoying herself and her body and the world. And, you know, but when she does that, you know, she's still like pilloried for it. Whereas you have other pop stars that are thin, that are white, you know, present a more kind of commercialized, standardized version of sex, and it's called empowering. Nobody questions their overall health, right? Whereas we do it for, you know, someone who looks at pleasure in all its forms.
I guarantee you Lizzo is the healthiest person any of us know of, because she, her performance is non-stop physicality that would like put me in a hospital. Like I guarantee you she's in amazing shape.
Yeah. And you know what, even if she wasn't, who would give a shit? Exactly. I mean, that's the other thing too, where it's like, you know, I think, and I'm certainly, you know, I think there are a lot of people who've written on this and talked about it, but like even like the spectrum of disability and sexuality and sensuality, you know, if we don't make room for conversations about that, when we limit our conversations about sex and sexuality to particular body types.
I had a guest on here many months ago, Danielle Perez. She's a stand-up comedian, and she is in a wheelchair. But we were talking about how there are no narratives for her that involve romance. And she was like, I want to write a rom-com where like someone in a wheelchair is the focal point, the center, not the friend or the relative or whatever. They are the center, and they are the one that gets to fall in love and like have something like exciting and fun and optimistic happen to them, because we don't tell those stories. And they are incredibly important to tell, and they're missing. I have a lot more optimism for the very, very young. Like if you are 14 right now, I have really good feelings about your future. I don't think that you're going to grow up the way that I did, seeing things so limited and seeing so much pressure to be a certain thing or a certain way. The most ironic thing is I remember being about 15 or 16, and I remember seeing Britney Spears. You only saw her with a bare midriff. That's the only way that you saw her. And I was like, I don't look anything like that. I'm not even remotely in her realm, but we're the same age. And it's just so, it's painfully sad and also ironic that now we're 38 and she is, you know, she's been robbed of so much was so commercialized back then. And maybe that's not who she really was either, but that's what we had to.
No, I think you're right. Or that it was even, but again, it's even something like, you know, I mean, I grew up and, you know, it's like you watch something like 90210 or Melrose. I mean, I'm really dating myself, but even like Buffy, as much as I love Buffy, you know, that became, you know, her romance. I mean, like her having sex for the first time is like almost destroys the world. I mean, these are sort of the messages that we got, very, very limited messaging. And so it's like, of course people would want to opt out. But yeah, I would like portrayals to change and I would love to see that rom-com. I mean, there's a precious few things for people of size, period. I think it is probably a little bit easier for men. You know, you see kind of the big guy pairing, you say that affectionately, pairing with, but always with petite women, right? But even then, you still see some more portrayals of fat women, not a lot, but some. But even then, it's white ladies, you know, and able-bodied people and cisgender people, and predominantly straight too. So there is a lot of room to grow. I hope that she gets to do that comedy because I think that sounds great.
I would see it opening night. I really would. I would
too. And I will be in movie theaters.
I will further date myself also and tell you that I actually prefer the Buffy movie to the Buffy TV show because that is an absolute classic. It is good. It is young Luke Perry. It is delicious.
I know, God. And that's the thing too, I don't want to derail it, but it's like, you know, I still have like desire. I mean, I still look at, you know, I mean, Luke Perry was like, I mean, I remember looking at pictures of him, you know, when unfortunately when he passed, when he was young and being reminded of like how beautiful he was, right? And
like sexually, you know, formative for so many of us. That was one of the first guys we looked at and started to understand our own sexuality.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, where it's like you get this messaging, you know, and I don't mean to derail it, but it's like you see these like guys, the like the dreamboat guys that you have, and they are and you're taught to want them. You're taught like it's the persona, it's the acting, but it's also the way they're packaged, the way they're modeled, what they do. But you also are told to want them. And then at the same time, you're never shown anybody who looks like you getting to have them, right? And it's funny because it's like, again, and I really don't mean to derail this with like conversations about media, but like, you know, I think about a show like Riverdale, and like Riverdale is the like delightful trash, or it can be, but that is a teen show. When you talk about representation, that wants to say it's more evolved than something like a 90210 or whatever. But they had at one point, they had like a fat woman on the show. She's kind of baby fat. She's it's the girl who played Barb in Stranger Things. You know, a woman. So she's on the show, and when she shows sexual desire for one of the leads, it's played as a joke. It's played to show how pathetic she is for having these desires and expressing them. I don't want to get into spoilery territory, but it's like, you know, and then that's sort of the messaging that I got too, where it's like the culture is saying, yeah, you got to have these desires. You got to want to do these things. You got to want to have these multiples and date and be part of this culture. But at the same time, when you do, you're a joke. I mean, I'll be real blunt with you. I find some of the early Melissa McCarthy movies very painful.
Yeah.
Especially her role in Bridesmaids. I think it's very hurtful. The way that character's desire for sexuality is portrayed as a joke. And so you know, I think for me, like making the decision to not put myself in positions where I would feel ridiculed or hurt or like, you know, you feel like, and that's not right. It's not right that someone like me should feel like that. But at the same time, like, that's the messaging that you get.
We get it in so many formats. I completely understand your feeling, not from that reference, but from others. I have a really big problem with The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, because when I watch it, I feel like they're making a cartoon of my culture. And it's hard. It was very hard for me to watch. So I get that. And we obviously, like, everything that's created doesn't have to make every person happy. Like, the whole world doesn't have to make each individual happy.
No.
But it would be nice to see more balance and more acknowledgement and, like, deeper, more nuanced stories that don't feel like caricatures. I think that would make, it would certainly make me feel better. But I feel that sentiment very much, just in a very different way, for sure. It's hard to take, but also it's, I mean, if I have to find a silver lining around it, it's educational. It helps me speak more clearly on things that I could previously not define.
Yeah.
I really had to think about why that show was bothering me, and I nailed it. I really did. I mean, awesome wardrobe, but you're making a caricature of Jewish people. So please stop that. Seriously, it's tough. Next question for you.
Yes, yes, yes.
This listener asks, how does she reconcile the experience of her friends that she talks about with her own? Does she find that hard? Does she have any positive dating experiences, especially in relation to her fatness? And does she still keep hope that she will have positive intimate experiences in the future? As someone who can see my future in this piece, I really hope she does, and I would love to know how.
Oh, wow. You know, I'm not, I mean, like, in terms of reconciling my friends' experiences, like, I would be lying to you if I said I did not have at times some sadness and some real, like, bitterness, that it is exponentially easier for some than others. Sometimes I hear those stories, I am sad. Sometimes I hear them and I think, well, thank God I'm not immersed in that. So it has ranged the gamut. In terms of positive dating experiences, I've had good individual dates, and then obviously the situations didn't work out on the whole. So I'll put it that way. Like, I've had good kind of individual dates, and I think they can happen. You know, and I have thought about it more lately, and it's, some of it is a function of, like, I'm getting a little bit older. I've achieved some bigger life goals of mine. Is this something that I would want to do again? And if I did want to do it, you know, how could it not be what it was for me in the past? Because I think that's the benefit of age. That's the benefit of time and kind of holding tight to myself. And, you know, I've made, one of the things that I've done is I've talked to other fat women for whom this is not their experience. And I have a friend, and I joke and I call her like my dating mentor. Because she's a very, very confident person. She is, you know, also someone of size. And she said to me one time, and I'm trying to take this to heart. I'm trying to embrace it more. And maybe this will be helpful to your listener too. But she said, to some degree, and I'm paraphrasing, you have to fake it till you make it. And she said, you have to walk out there and act like people want you, and you have to know as you get older and you re-enter, like, there are going to be more people, and again, we're talking about in a cis hetero way, so she used the word men, but there are going to be more men who desire you than you think there will be, and they are now more in an age where they don't give a shit what their friends think. But And I don't know if that's true because now we're all locked down. But I think that there might be something to that. I think the idea that, you know, that you sort of make a choice about what you're going to project. Is it going to insulate me totally from the world and the judgments of the world and the way that the world is going to think about somebody who looks like me? No, it's not. But when she said it, I thought, oh, I maybe have more agency and control over this than I think I do. And so I would like there to be positive experiences, and it's going to be very hard, but I'm going to try to believe that I could do that. I could kind of put it out there and fake it to make it a sort of a crass term, but like basically, I guess the way I would put it, and I don't mean to say she did a crass term, but like it is
what it is.
What I'm trying to say is it shouldn't even be fake. I know certain things. That's it. I know certain things, and I think this is what she was trying to convey too. I know certain things about myself, and I know certain things about my own worth. I just have to like kind of sandblast through that narrative in my head that it won't matter to other people. And I have to decide that it will matter what I know that I am. Not necessarily what the culture says I am, but what I know that I am.
I think that's a very elegant way to approach that answer, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I owe much to my friend.
The last question I will ask you is, has she found kinship in any community or writings that have nurtured her sense of freedom and companionship in her body? That was one of the most tender descriptions of being reverent with one's body, and I'm so appreciative.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I'm telling you, this audience is amazing. They are an amazing group of human beings.
I'm going to join. I think, you know, for me, like, it's finding communities of other fat people, especially like fat women. There is a woman named Substantia Jones who did something called the Adipositivity Project. And those are photographs of people of size, all different body types, all different genders, gender identities, presentations, you know, and that was really powerful for me. Like Lindy West's writing was really useful. And I interviewed her when Shrill came out the first season, and like, I was gonna cry on the phone. I was like, just get your shit together.
I'm dying for season two. I cannot wait.
It's so good. I've seen it. Shrill, it's out. Yeah, it came out. It came out in March.
I think that's because my Hulu has been canceled since the pandemic, and I'm like really reluctant to buy yet another service. It's out. Damn it. Okay, I have to get it.
Yeah, you have to. And this season is so good, and it is about, you know, I mean, but her writing in Shrill and the way she talks about her body and thinks about her body. And she has some like epiphanies this season related to it that like, when you see it, you have to like message me.
I will.
Contact with each other. So somebody like Samantha Irby, like her writing, she also writes for Shrill, her writing.
I just finished her most recent book. Wow. No, thank you. Oh, it's outstanding. Outstanding.
Yvette Dion, who has written a lot about size as well, in very, very powerful ways. I think, honestly, one of the kindest things you can do for yourself, like if you go to like Instagram and you look at like plus size models or like fat models, I mean, I swear it will really, I remember seeing those body types and that sounds simple and it is, but it's like, literally just the visibility is a big factor as well. And it normalizes it for you. Like that's, I hate to say it that way, but it does, it normalizes it. And so that is what helped me a large part of it. You know, that sense of community that I found. And then, you know, there are groups for people on like Facebook, you know, I think finding people in social media that you like that talk about size and healthy and like emotionally healthy and constructive ways is really valuable. Just anything that makes you feel like less alone and sort of more normalized in your own skin, whatever that may be, and in your own body, whatever your body may be, is a good thing to do, I think. But that's definitely where I feel like I started. I'm trying to think if there's anything.
Those are else. Huge. And we use them all the time as members of a single person community. And I wish that there were more like in-person routes to that. And I don't want to blame the pandemic on it, because it's hard in normal times to make new friends. It's very difficult. It's the most common question that I'm ever asked, is how to make new friends as an adult. And it's a fine art. And I'm actually like trying to work on content around that, because I want to be able to provide that resource, because you do get so many new resources for this, like speaking with the number of people that you speak with when you have a podcast. So I want to be able to share that, because it is hard to find your people sometimes, you know, but social media makes it a hell of a lot easier.
It does. And honestly, like the relationships that I have formed online have been really like sustaining and healing and nurturing in these ways even before this happened. And they really helped me with my own thinking. And, you know, so like Lindy West is a good one. Hannah Blank is a good writer. And Hannah Blank also has a book that is expressly called Big, Big Love or something. It's called something like that. And it is about fat sex. And, you know, so that was a big one. Kate Harding, you know, there's a lot of people that I could turn to in that way. Marilyn Wan is another one. Just reading a lot of that stuff.
And I will link to it all in the show notes so you guys don't have to stress about that.
Oh, good. Thank you. Yeah. So that was really helpful for me. Just that's where I found community.
Amazing.
And I don't know. I feel like we're at a time period now where like you could just message people and they might be more receptive, because we're all kind of, you know, just trying to make it.
Yeah, we're all also stuck at home with fully charged iPhones.
Yeah, that's true. We stuck at home with fully charged iPhones and dogs and cats.
And dogs and cats. Tell everybody how they can follow you on social media and how they can keep up with your work.
Oh, sure. I am on Twitter and I'm going to just make sure I have my, it's at LD Bogart. And that is my Twitter account. There will be pictures of the dog and videos of the dog. In addition to that, I have also a website that I need to update, and that is laurabogart.net, LauraBogart.net. And again, like my debut novel came out on St. Patrick's Day of this year. You know, is Don't You Know I Love You, and it's from DeZank Books. And also on my website, I am gonna try to update it with like various readings and stuff that I've done for it. I've been really lucky to be part of like a literary community that has like helped those of us who've had launches impacted. So there's a lot of video of me reading from that book.
Amazing. And I hope you get to have some sort of like 1 year anniversary launch party to make up for the fact that nobody got to have a launch party or a book tour this spring.
I know. Yeah. It's sort of like one of those things where it's like, I realize that it's like a very, you know, like in terms of the problems of the world, it ain't much, I would still like to do that. I think all of us should have a big book party.
I agree. I think we should have a variety of parties. I want to have a party once there's a vaccine and everybody's healthy. I want to have a party where everyone comes dressed up as the thing that got canceled during COVID that they really were looking forward to the most. You know what I mean? Like I want brides showing up in their wedding dresses. Like I will show up like inspired by the city of Paris because my Paris trip got canceled. Like all that kind of stuff. Don't cry for me. I'm going back. Don't worry.
Okay, my book cover, I could get a t-shirt with my book cover on it because it is a pretty great cover.
So your outfit is set. We're good.
My outfit is set, and I could even bring that. Well, actually, I've spent more time with the dog than I think I have talked to you, than I ever have. So
like, I know my cat is like over my presence. She doesn't fuck with me anymore.
The dog is like super happy.
Thank you so much for joining me. This was a pleasure of a conversation. It was a delight to speak with you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with this audience. I know they appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me on. And thank you to all of your listeners for such a wonderful response to the piece and for such beautiful, thoughtful questions. I hope that I did them justice.
You did. And they are the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.